This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beagles to put it down. Feely's kick. Pressure kick. Not even close. And now Hester, after hesitating, he's going to run it out. And Hester is going to run it out past the 40 into Giants territory. He is going to go all the way. Touchdown, Chicago, and no flags. It's a play that equals the longest play in the history of the National Football League.
Heck of a block.
Almost got some players kick. Devin Hester from the 18. Brady blocks Devin Hester into the open field. And Hester picks up another block. Devin Hester, the punter to beat. He beat him. Devin Hester, all the way. Touchdown, Chicago.
Just incredible.
That is exactly what he did in college at Miami.
Vinatieri has it on the tee. The Colts in all white. The Bears, navy blue and white. You know, numerals are about ready to go.
By the people in the stands, they don't need seats today because they're all standing.
Vinatieri on the approach platform. Popping here in Miami. It sails to the far side around the 8-yard line to Hester. Under it and to the middle with the 15 to the 20. Breaks free of the 25 to the 30. To the outside. 40. Midfield. 40. 30 of the Colts. 20. 15. Hester 5. Oh!
Yes, Tom Thayer, there was a way, and it did happen, and we're going to talk about it now. Guys, we want to welcome you back into the Sportsbook at Ameristar pregame show featuring Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley. I am Hub Arkush. It is great to be with you. Visit Ameristar's new sportsbook in East Chicago, and let's start where we left off with the last highlight cut, the first play of the Super Bowl in Miami, Bears and Indianapolis Colts. We have the pleasure and the honor of being joined by a man who was just voted one of the 100 greatest players in the history of the National Football League for one of the NFL's charter franchises. He is, I think, without debate, the greatest kick returner in the history of the game. Opened the Super Bowl by returning the opening kickoff, only the second time it had ever been done. We're going to talk about a lot of records. Devin Hester joins us this morning, and Devin, cannot thank you enough. This is Hub. Of course, Patrick and Olin are alongside. And I guess we'll just start there because there's so much to talk about. What was going through your mind as you once you broke free, you realized you were taking the opening kick of the Super Bowl to the house? Do you remember at all what you were thinking at that moment?
I was just, crossing the 50-yard line, going towards the end zone. It was kind of like a dream come true, you know. Never dreamed about it growing up, you know, so at that stage of that moment, man, it was one of the biggest stages of my life, you know, especially being my rookie year. And then, just can't believe it's really happening.
Devin, congratulations on being one of the top 100 players in the NFL history. That's awesome, and it's an honor. Olin and I were talking about to have you as a teammate. Congratulations on that, buddy.
Appreciate everything, man. And at the end of the day, you know, I can't thank you guys enough for, you know, support and just encourage me and welcome me into the team, man. You know, like I said, you guys was big role models. I always looked up to you guys as leaders, you know what I mean? And then to be able to play alongside you guys was a great, great honor for me.
Well, the same here, watching you work and play and all that stuff. I want you to kind of break down what made you a great returner. You obviously had unbelievable speed, your instincts, your vision. What made it all work, and kind of what was the most important part of your game to make you a great returner?
I would say after all the tendencies that you called, I would say the least one, the one that is not mentioned a lot was fear. You know, to be a returner, you know, you have to be fearless, you know, to sit back there and feel those punts and those kicks and be able to hit those holes fast as you can, knowing as a great running back, he's fearless of hitting it up in the hole and going, you know. And I think that's what I was, you know, successful at, is not being so being fearless and being able to trust my teammates and hitting there, knowing I got 250-pound guys waiting to knock my head off to go ahead and hit it in there every single time.
Hey, Hess, man, congratulations. Top 100 NFL football players of all time, man. That's amazing. I got a first-row seat to watching you do most of your returns. It was amazing to be on that sideline and screaming for you to go to the house because a lot of times our offense wasn't going to put in the end zone unless you did. So we're thankful for that. Hess, I was watching you on NFL Network, I think it was, and you were talking about that little pause you would take to assess your return or assess what the return, the coverage team was doing to you. Talk to us a little bit about that and how important that pause was to you. I found that really interesting. Never heard you talk about that before.
Right. It's almost like pretty much watching Tom Brady play football. In order for him to have the defense show the coverage and get out their disguises to motion somebody. And I looked at that pause as, you know, these guys can't help it. They know they have to hurry up and get in their alignment. They have, you know, they sometimes they have guys, you know, coming the opposite way to kick off, you know what I mean, fanning the opposite side. And at the end of the day, they're going to show their coverage. And so sometimes you have to take that pause to let those guys show what side they're really, really trying to protect. And other than that, you know, sometimes the pause can help out, you know, with me and my defenders, you know, my key blockers, you know, those guys sometimes – at the end of the day, everybody get paid. So sometimes those guys might get beat off their block, you know. So it by me pausing to allow those guys to catch up with their defenders and to get a handle.
Devin, you, of course, were a great cornerback at the University of Miami. And I remember standing on the sidelines during camp in Bourbonnais with Jerry Angelo that rookie year back in 06. And he was talking about you and obviously real excitement about what you were going to bring to the return game. But, you know, I asked Jerry, do you see Devin as an outside corner, a slot corner? And he said, well, to be honest with you, we haven't really talked to him about it yet, but we think maybe he's a wide receiver. And I think that transition, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that happened after your rookie year. Talk a little bit about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. How did you feel about it, first of all, making the switch? And what was that all about as you were trying to really get comfortable in the NFL?
My passion was always that defense. I always loved being on the defense side of the ball. Of course, every kid grows up and wants to score a touchdown. But defense, I felt the passion because it was more of I get more of adrenaline just sitting down one side of the field. And I had a passion of baiting the quarterback and getting able to get some interceptions. And, of course, you know, with my return ability, being able to take it to the house. But it all came – the decision really came down to towards the end of my rookie year when teams really, really started kicking away from me. And Coach Levy and Coach Drake, the receiver coach, pretty much was hassling me throughout that season, towards the end of the season, you know, like, yo, these teams are really, really going to start kicking away to you, you know, coming into this next season. You one of the best players, you know, with the ball in your hand. We got to figure out a way to get the ball more in your hands. And that's where it really, really triggered into those guys really, really moved me to offense was just, you know, they're just like, man, you just never really seen a guy like you with the ball in your hand. So we're going to have to figure out a way to get the ball in your hand now that teams are kicking away from you.
Well, and not that it could have been much greater, but have you ever wondered what your career might have been like if you'd have stayed at cornerback and stayed on defense?
I always do. I honestly always do. I always think about, you know, as you know, getting comfortable and situated in the defense, and you know, 2-3 years from my rookie year, how would that cornerback pan out for me? Now, I always think about it, you know, and it's always in the back of my head, and still to this day it is, you know, wondering if I would have stayed at corner, how my career would have paid out.
Devin, you were great, obviously, at kick return and punt return, but which one did you enjoy more and why?
I would say I enjoy it more so punt return. Punt return was more of, I would say, relying on your God-given talent. Kickoff return was always designed. It was a designed play, so you know you had to stick with the plan. And you know what I mean? Sometimes the plan don't work. You know, sometimes, you know, 2 or 3 guys slip through. But punt return, you had a little more leeway to really, really go off your God-given talent and allow to make some bigger plays, I feel.
You know how good you are, Hess, when you're on the top 100 all time in the NFL, and you wonder how your career would have turned out. With your God-given talent. So I know it's important to you. I see you doing a lot of flag football with your sons now. Tell us how old your kids are, and give us some tips that they're lucky enough to be coached by you when you're coaching your team for young football players out there listening to you right now, wondering about how to return the ball or just be a football player, period.
Oh, man, it's very exciting, man. My middle one is really, I would say my brother. I call him my brother. He acts just like my brother. He talk to me like we brothers. He go off on me like we brothers. So he's up on me the most. He's the one that's really playing. It's going pretty good, man. And I enjoy coaching the little kids, man. I've been coaching flag football for 3 years now. I travel team in Orlando. We 3 years straight undefeated champions. We just won our championship game last week. And the joy that I get out of little kids is that they listen. And you know what I mean? All you have to do is show them a football card or a poster of you, and they you play football, and you got them. And the joy that I
What's
get out of those
name,
kids.
Yes?
Huh?
What's the team's name?
It's a West Orange Bobcats. It's in Orlando. And like I was saying, they enjoy listening to me, so I enjoy seeing improvement from the minute I get those guys to the end of the season, how they improve and how they to their minds like a sponge, man. Like I said, it's been a great honor, you know, being able a privilege to coach young kids, and I enjoy doing it, man.
Will you continue coaching as they get older?
Yeah, I'm going to continue coaching my middle one. My little one is coming right behind him. My oldest one, he's a different personality. He's on adventure on some other things. You know, he's more of a kid. He wants to play with toys and stuff like that. But my middle one, my youngest one, is very into sports. So my middle one is moving up to Tiger next year, so I'll be moving up with him.
This hour on the car, this hour on the score is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-KARS, the number 4, KIDS. Devin, let me ask you another little different position question. I remember, you know, working on the broadcast and talking about it and thinking, gee, would he be a better fit as more of a third down type change of pace running back than a wide receiver? And then since you've played, we've seen Darren Sproles come around. We see what Tariq Cohen is doing now with the Bears. And you talked about, you know, the main goal was to get the ball in your hands more. Have you ever thought about, you know, maybe playing a little wide out, not necessarily running between the tackles so much, but being able to, playing a little running back and maybe being able to do some more different things that way?
I was always a team player. So, you know, whatever the coach felt fit for me, you know, I ended up playing a couple of snaps at running back with Chicago and a couple of trickery plays like that. But at the end of the day, I was like, coach, whatever is going to be better for the team, it's going to make the team more better, you know. And whatever you have designed for me, I'm willing to do it. You know, like I said, I'm a team ball player. So whatever it takes to win, that's what I was willing to do.
Devin, a question I like to ask teammates or just guys that have been, you know, successful in the NFL is, was there a play that you had when you got done, you said, wow, I just did that? Do you have one of those plays that surprised you what you were able to do?
I would say that punt return I had against the Vikings, I think it was my second year. I think that's when Minnesota came in, and they ended up beating us like in the last 30-some seconds of the game. But it was a punt return that I caught deep over my shoulder, maybe like on 5 yard line, 5 to 7 yard line, and
that was one of those. Like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
And it was go.
Yeah. It was that exact place, man. And I drifted over. I caught it going over my shoulder, and I started drifting towards the opposite side of the field. And it was like 4 or 5 of their players just got free, and I was like, I don't know how the hell I'm gonna get through these guys. And I managed to hop and skip through 5 players, man, and take off to the end zone, man. And I think after I watched that play 100 times, I'm like, I don't know how the hell I got through that.
Hey, Hess, I know you grew up in Miami, went to University of Miami, returned the opening touchdown to Super Bowl in Miami. Do you remember the first time you had a return for a touchdown in high school or little league football or where it was?
First time I had a return touchdown?
Yeah.
It was The crazy thing about it, I didn't have a return in punt warner. My first return happened in high school, my senior year, versus Florida, California. It was the Florida All-Star versus California All-Stars, and I ran the opening kickoff back. And after that, I ain't seen no more kicks. But in high school, I never got the ball kicked to them. They would always squib kick.
Smart coaching right there. Well, let's go back to Miami, too, because your highlight film from Miami is unbelievable. How many return kicks did you have in college?
I think I had 6 or 7. People don't know this, but my first time touching the ball in Orange Bowl went for a 92-yard kickoff return. A lot of people don't know that. My freshman year in college, we played an opening game against Florida Gators. First play of the game, kickoff, freshman year, 92-yard touchdown, man. And that really set the stage for me to my fans and my coach that, hey, this kid here, he's coming to play football.
Hey, did anybody of the teammates – well, let me give the story, the backstory here. And, Olin, I think we might have talked about it a couple weeks ago when we would sit in special teams meetings. You wouldn't call it a bounty, but somebody would say, hey, if Devin returns this kick – is $500 a man.
Oh, man, yeah. Hester cost me a lot of money that year.
Yes. Urlacher, Olin, a lot of teammates did that. The question is, did anybody come up to you and say thank you after they collected their cash?
Oh, man, yeah, you had a lot of them, man, that said, man, you know, it was like, boy, listen, hey, boy, listen, no fair catching today, and do not take a D in the end zone if they kick a D. Come on. So I had a lot of pressure from my blockers, man. Those guys. They did not want me fair catching anything and not taking a knee. Everything was returnable.
Hey, Hess, I was talking to J-Mac, and he said that they wanted to take him out because he was playing so much fullback and let him rest. And he said, yeah. Hey, he told the coaches, take me out of office. I'll make you more money on special teams with Hess's returns than I am on offense.
Hey, man. Devin, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm okay.
No, I was just going to ask, you know, we talk a lot about the great breakaway and open field runners, and we talk so much about vision. And I don't know if this is easy to put into words or not, but obviously you had incredible vision, and it appeared that you would see things that just a little quicker before anybody else was seeing them out there. What was that process like for you? I mean, I know you had to secure the ball. And then what was your first instinct once you had that ball and you looked and saw what was in front of you?
Right. I just eliminated a lot of runners. They just see too much. I simplified it down to, you know, colors. I was always a color guy. I didn't see the number of the player. I just seen color. So I would try to avoid the opposite color, you know, as quick as possible. And for me, that really helped me out a lot. At the end of the day, like, When I came up on the guy, I didn't know if he was a punter or a kicker until I really slowed things down. But I was moving so fast, so I was always colors. So I treated everybody like, you know what I mean? The fast guy on the punter, I really didn't know if he was a punter or not because all I seen was colors. And so my main thing was avoid the color and try to get close as I can to my colors.
Devin, I don't think people realize.
That really helped me out.
Well, sorry about that. Hey, but I don't think people realize your God-given ability and how hard you worked at your craft. Can you talk about how many times you sat there at practice and caught balls off the jugs machine? We're working on being able to read a punt off a punter's foot, and maybe just talk about how difficult it is to catch, just how hard it is to catch a punt.
It's very difficult. So a lot of returners don't know the most key part to filling punts is beating the ball to the spot. You know what I mean? A lot of people catching balls unbalanced. They still moving while they're catching it. It's reading the nose of the ball and beating that ball to the spot before it hits there. And that's where I realized that's when it's so much easier to fill a punt is you beat the ball to the spot and you're there relaxed. You wait. You got a second and a half to a second to fill it. You know, it's hard catching a ball on the move. And so my biggest thing that I learned, you know, as over the years grew was – if I can read the nose of this ball and beat it there, beat it to that spot, that way I'm there and I'm set up and my feet are square and I'm relaxed and I'm comfortable, it's a way easier catch. And that's what a lot of returners have to work on is reading the nose of the ball and beating that ball to that location of that spot where it's getting ready to land. And you do that.
Hey, when you're the best to ever do it, obviously you don't have to study a lot of people, but was there any returner that you did study – that you got some tips from on how to return punts and kicks?
I would say, man, coming to the league, I watched a lot of D'Angelo Hall. Was really the talk. I paid attention to him. Josh Crib was pretty. He was hot at the time. And I watched some of Deion's returns with some of the guys that I really, really, me and Coach Day really sat down and watched.
Hey, Dev, Olin and Pat have both shared some of their favorite Bear Packer moments. I know you know what's going on today, what's at stake for this year's Chicago Bears. What are some of your fondest memories of the whole Bear Packer rivalry thing?
I would say the first week of the game, which was my rookie year, was when it was just beat into my brain that, hey, at the end of the day, this is our goal. Beat Green Bay Packers, win division, and win the Super Bowl. And I was like, after leaving that meeting, I was like, wow, they don't care if we lose to anybody else. As long as we beat Green Bay, win the division, and win the Super Bowl, that's all we got to do. So that was instilled in my mind from day one, and just going up to that week of preparing for it and watching all the old highlights and the rivalry that those guys had, you know, from battles of playing field and the games and stuff like that, was to beat the Green Bay Packers.
Devin, it was great to catch up with you. Awesome to talk to you. This segment we've done all year has been great, and again, congratulations on being one of the best football players in the history of the NFL, top 100. It was great catching up with you, man.
Likewise, man. Good talking to you guys, man.
Have a good one, Hess. Congrats, man.
I appreciate it, Olin. All right, Pat.
All right, that was that, you bet. Talk to you later, man. Olin, that was awesome. I got to ask you, awesome. Olin, though. You talked about having the front row seat for all his returns. What was maybe your favorite return?
I think the one when he broke the record in Minnesota when Minnesota's stadium closed. I mean, obviously the Super Bowl is just hard to bring it up when you lost it. But look, I mean, you can't downplay what he did that day. That was an amazing, the feeling you had when he returned. You couldn't believe it was happening. It was like it was a story, right? Like you couldn't have wrote it any better. So the guy was electric. When I still dance when Superman comes on in my house.
I do too.
Right? I still dance. And I tell a story of Devin Hester, and my daughters are like, Dad, like, knock it off. Like, stop dancing. But he was so electric, and yet he was on our team. And the thing when he just said there, and you start to realize, right, Pat, and you were in there, and Maynard was, and Robbie Gould, and Ian Bendejo, and Israel Adonijé, and Jason McKee, and Dave Tobe, and Chris Tabor, how many good people were in one room for the special teams? When he said, me and Dave studied D'Angelo Hall, we studied Josh Cribb, like, and I'm sure Hess would say the same things, a lot of guys help you to be the greatest. And this guy, I mean, like you said, and you can speak to it more than me, being in special teams meetings, you guys were a high-level unit. Mm-hmm. And that was a perfect storm for what this guy brought.
It was, and we took pride in it, and Coach Tobe, you know, set the standard high. And those are the special teams rankings that Rick Gosling put out, and we always shot to be number one. And having Devin behind you, you knew you had a head start right in that ranking. But you mentioned about how hard Devin worked. You know, some people think, you know, it's just God-given ability, and I asked him about, you know, learning how to catch a punt. The little things he did to become great, you know, was impressive to watch. I mean, when you guys would be practicing offense, and maybe he wasn't a receiver at that time later in his career, he's over on the other field just catching thousands of balls off the jugs. And he's working on the wind, on the windy days at Hallis Hall. Like you said, he's watching all that tape with Coach Tobe. I didn't know he was watching that much tape with Coach Tobe until later, because that's stuff that it gets hidden in Hallis Hall. You go up to the office and you don't get to see it. But it was an honor to play with that guy. It was lucky to watch him. And you knew his legend was keep growing each week because he was going to return a kick and become what he is now, one of the top 100 players in the NFL.
Yeah, and you go to this year's team, Pat, and you talk about a guy who dominates on special teams, and he doesn't always get a chance to return the ball, but Cordero Patterson,
yes,
is a fun guy to watch on special teams. And someone said the other day, it was like somebody went into, I forget who it was, I like to credit them, but if you remember, please say
it. No, but I heard it, but I forgot who said it.
If someone went on Madden and created the ultimate gunner on the punt team, it would be Cordero Patterson. And you know, you watch this guy play, you watch him compete, and the word that comes to your mind is just football player. Mm-hmm. He just, on Miller's touchdown last week, on RPO, Mitch read it nice, threw it out there. Who's over there with the touchdown block? It's Cordarrelle Patterson, yep. Right? Who's stopping all the punts? It's Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, this guy changes the game in his own way, Pat. And I'm interested to see what you think about when you watch him on film.
Well, you talked about the Madden player and try to create the perfect gunner. Well, Dave Tobe tried to do that with different guys. Like, he would try a speed guy. He put Israel Adonijay out there once.
I remember that, yeah.
And that's a 6'6", 280-pound guy. So if you take the speed guy and you take Izzy, who do you got? Cordarrelle Patterson.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
And he's perfect. But the thing is, as a gunner, you get double-teamed. And you have to have the want to. I mean, that thing is a physical play. You've seen it on the sidelines when the gunner gets pushed out of bounds, running around, trying to get back in play. But Cordarrelle Patterson just has that want to. You talked about our room. He wants to be great, and he shows it on tape. He does all the little things right. And from what I hear inside that room, he's the leader. He's the guy that people follow. So he's just darn good. But we got to take a quick break, and we're going to be coming up with Mark Grody later with the inactives from Cold Lambeau Field, and we'll find out about who's playing for the Bears today. So stick around right after these messages.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
It affects every position. I mean, we've looked at some tape at even, you know, there's guys in previous games on that field where there's, you know, long snappers that are slipping, you know. So we just want to make sure every field we go to, I think with Tony Medlin being here and being in charge of all that with our guys' cleats and surfaces and knowing all that, well, our guys would be prepared. But it can, I mean, obviously the skill positions, the guys that are breaking, cutting, running deep, that's what DBs, wide receivers, is probably where you see it the most. And then sometimes you can see it with edge rushers as they go to cut the corner. You know, you can see some slipping and falling. So we want to be smart.
Matt Nagy talking about the playing conditions up at Lambeau. We mentioned it earlier in the program. Once the gold standard of surfaces in the National Football League, it has become one of the worst this year. Bears are prepared for it. And any pregame preview that identifies T-Med as one of the most important guys on the team, that's good. That's good by me. These guys are laughing. If you have not met Tony Medlin, you need to meet him, and
the legend, Tony Medlin.
Absolutely. You know, I know Clyde Emmerich is the legend, but T-Med is legend too. Bottom of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Need the perfect gift for family and friends. The Chicago Wolves Holiday Flex Pack gives you 10 ticket vouchers, a commemorative hockey puck, and more, all for one low price. Go to ChicagoWolves.com. God, how great visiting with Devin. You know, guys, even towards the end of his career, getting like 5 words out of him was a full-time mm-hmm. job for me. And just the way he's kind of grown and matured, and the guy he's turned into, it's really impressive to see the difference in him today from the kid who arrived back in 06.
It is. And we did an event, I think, 2 years ago, like one of those Studio events or something, like whatever it's called, and had a chance to be in a small, you know, setting with him on stage telling those stories. And you're in awe of some of the stuff he could do. That's just what Olin, like you said, we had a front row seat for that, and then be able to go in Mondays and watch it on tape and slow-mo and see what he's seeing and have him talk about it. It was we were lucky to be able to play with him.
Yeah, like Hub said, when you play with a guy for so long, Pat, and you watch him mature, and we all knew Devin was dying to be great.
Yes.
And he became great. And a lot of that, what a lot of people don't know, was his work ethic. And then you hear him call in, and you realize that he's a dad now. Yeah. He's got 3 sons. He knows all their personality traits. He's raising them. He's coaching them. And he just it's amazing to watch a guy, I mean, an honor, like you said, to watch a guy go from where he came from – just working his butt off, wanting to be great, and just another guy. You realize how special our locker room was. Another great football player who was just a really good dude.
And he wants to get back to the game. That's right. Cool, him getting back into coaching. And then if any returner was listening, you better listen to what he was talking about, right. Being able to catch the punt, how important it is to beat the ball there. You know, talking about how just to set up the return. That was amazing, though. There were so many times, I know us on the sideline, like, what are you doing? Oh, go, 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 go.
I don't know about you, but I have it in my notes, what he was saying. Because when I talk to kids, I'm going to tell them, get to your spot.
Yep.
You know, take a little pause, assess the defense. Yep. Don't make it too complicated. Only see color. So Hess gave a lot of gems there.
Yes.
If you are listening and you play football as a young football player, I hope you had your notepad out.
Mm-hmm.
This hour is brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner. 30 million people come down with the flu every year. It could be you or your family. The best way to tell if it's a cold or the flu is by taking your temperature, and no one does that better than the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Learn more at exergen.com. We're going to sneak in another real quick break here because we got Grody checking in from the frozen tundra up at Lambeau Field with the actives, inactives in just a moment. Of course, Akeem Hicks is active. He was activated off of IR yesterday. We'll get the rest of that story in just a moment right here at The Score.
The thing in our head is to go out and get this win this week. And, everything else is going to take care of itself. But ultimately, just winning this game, because it's the next one, is the most important thing right now.
Khalil Mack is one of the four or five best defensive players in all of football. And he doesn't like talking about himself. You just can't get him to do it. And when we get these interviews, you know, he's so soft-spoken, and sometimes it's almost hard to hear him, but he's really great at it. I mean, he has all this really good stuff to say. And he's just, you know, for those of you who, beyond the football stuff, you know, want to know the whole story, he's such an impressive young man. The story broke, I think it was a week ago tomorrow, that he had gone back to his hometown in Fort Pierce, Florida, and walked into Walmart and paid off the layaway accounts of everybody who had bought Christmas gifts. It came to almost $80,000. And on Friday, you know, we asked him, we don't want him to brag about it or anything, but just said, you know, what made you want to do that? What was the motivation? And he just looked at me and he said, I don't want to talk about that.
Right.
You know, it just, and he's genuine about it, you know, and it's something that you just, you know, I guess I'm lucky because of what I do for a living, but you get to appreciate you guys, current Bears players, you know, people like everybody else. And Khalil Mack is really kind of a unique individual.
Yeah, and you know, his character, Pat, like that doesn't shock you when you watch him on film play football because he's always doing the little things, always fighting for his teammates, always picking guys off the ground, stopping the run, filling his gap, doing what he's supposed to be doing. And it sounds weird, but you can almost tell what kind of guy a guy is just by watching him play football. And when you watch him play football, that doesn't shock me that he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, and he seemed like you were talking about his character, but just also he has the God-given ability. But to play with guys like you and the other great ones, you guys were great because you did all the little things. And he seems like a guy that does that, like going to Walmart. Not just all the little things on and off the field at Hallis Hall, but in life. And that's just a cool story to hear. And those are more stories happen like that from guys in NFL locker rooms that aren't told, but not everybody wants the pat on the back. And that's pretty cool that Khalil Mack is just, you know, deflects everything and is just happy to do it without the notoriety.
Sometimes it takes a guy a while to do the little things right in life. But you got to start somewhere, Pat. So you hit the field first and you just slowly work to it.
That makes for the better story.
Right.
You know, one of the other things that we talked to him about on Friday was you're going into week 15 here. There's three games left. He's got 7.5 sacks. This is a guy who has never had less than double-digit sacks. He's had as many as 14, 15 in a season. And, you know, Khalil, is it frustrating? How do you feel about it? And he looks at you like you're crazy, mm-hmm. and he says, man, we've won four of our last five games. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm doing my job out there the best I can. The defense is playing well. He said, I want to win.
Uh-huh.
He said, I don't care if I get another sack all season. I want to win. And where I'm going with this, and I think you guys will agree with me, I've covered a lot of guys in my life, And I would say 80 or 90% of them, the pass rushers on defense, I ask them the same question. They give me that answer. And me and the rest of the media walk away going, yeah, sure. With Khalil, you can feel it.
Right.
There's no question about it that the most important thing to him is he wants to win a championship.
And there's a guy coming back today that'll help him get his numbers up again, Pat. And Akeem Hicks being back. Look, we know that Trevathan and Roquan Smith are out, but that front five there with Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, Bilal Nichols, Floyd and Mack, that's what we were really excited about to start this year. And with Akeem coming back, if he's anywhere near 80, 85%, Pat, it's going to make Mack that much more dangerous.
And the other thing is, too, that the Packers still have to – they don't know what percentage he is that you were talking about. So their game plan all week has to be for 100% Akeem Hicks. So that changes it as well. So hopefully we get the 80-plus percent Akeem Hicks, but I think he's already changed the game plan a little bit for Matt LaFleur up there.
Well, it is so important to the Bears to have Akeem back, and we do now have our guy on the spot, Mark Grody, of course, Chicago Bears beat reporter here for us at 670 The Score. Also, the voice of the Chicago Bears from the sidelines. You'll hear Mark during the broadcast of the game on our sister stations, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM on your FM dial, along with Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer. And Mark is checking in from Lambeau. And you know, Mark, we know they didn't bring Akeem back the way they did, activate him off IR yesterday, not for him to be active today. So we know he will be. But another guy who benefits from it and is also critical, who was struggling all week long with a bum ankle, Roy Robertson-Harris, didn't know what his status was going to be today. So if you can, run it down for us. Who's going to be in uniform, who's not, and any concerns about the guys who aren't able to go?
Yeah, the key one is that guy that you just mentioned, Roy Robertson-Harris. He will not give it a go, and I think that some of that was helped out by the fact that Akeem Hicks obviously is active out here today. So it's really more about the guy. I mean, I can tell you, too, you know, the actual inactives are Taylor Gabriel, Eric Salvert, Danny Trevathan, Bobby Massey out again this week, as is Abdullah Anderson, and Corey Levin as well. So those are the guys that are inactive. But, you know, you mentioned that key name. I heard you guys talking about Akeem Hicks. He was just out here a short while ago going through all the warm-ups with everybody else, you know, looking like he was going full force and what they asked guys to do before. One thing to note about Akeem is I looked at him, and it looked to me he looked thinner. So I just went up to him a little while ago. I said, Akeem, you lost a little weight. And he's like, well, everybody keeps asking me that. He said, it's just I haven't been able to lift. So he's actually lost a little bit of bulk, a little bit of muscle, because obviously when you have an elbow injury, you're not going to be able to do much weightlifting. So we'll see how much that affects him. But from what I've seen in him in practice, and then even out here, he's not been holding back. And obviously if he wasn't good to go, they wouldn't put him out here.
Well, Roquan Smith is out with the torn pec, and Kevin Pierre-Lewis was the talk all week. What were the coaches saying about him, and what do they expect from him today?
Well, they are expecting a lot from him, and here's what the coaches say about him specifically, that he's fast, plays fast. Sometimes even when a guy does have speed, it doesn't always show up in game situations. And they mentioned things like quick him and speed. Somebody said that there's drop off, you know, from Roquan Smith. I don't know. That might be taking it a step too far. But, I mean, this guy is an absolute pro. We saw what he was capable of doing last week and stepping in. He's a confident guy. I actually had him on our pregame show today, and he's a really interesting guy to talk to, too. Really, really smart guy. So he's enjoyable, kind of guy that you root for and hope that eventually he finds himself, you know, a permanent or, you know, a few-year landing place in the NFL at some point in time. But obviously, as you said, he's going to have, you know, a huge task today with what Aaron Rodgers will do, and obviously Aaron Jones playing a big part too. So he's going to definitely get tested today.
Hey, Grody, identification, a big key for the Bears offense today, and we heard a couple weeks back that's why they moved Cody Whitehair back to center. Being around the team this week, was it a big talk about communication identifying the blitzes, identifying who they got as an offensive line, and how much is Mitch taking ownership of that responsibility?
Oh, yeah. No, that's been a huge part of it. And I think that's one of the most important parts, Olin, that we've seen Mitchell Trubisky take command and impose his will on this team, and he's doing it his way. I don't know, like, he's always been told the second he got here that they're going to make things comfortable for him, and if there's things that he is not comfortable with, they won't use them. But I don't know if he was comfortable in voicing that opinion because he didn't want to look like he wasn't capable of doing some things. But now I think he's like, the hell with it. Look, I'm going to do things my way. I'm confident with the way I set up things. Once I get to the offensive line, and if I see that green grass in front of me, I might just run as opposed to extending the play and looking for one of my playmakers down the field. So, you know, we've obviously seen him be really good in a few games, but this is probably going to be of the bunch. And, you know, Dallas is the Cowboys, no slouches, and Green Bay, not a great defense, but we've seen them, Mike Pettine, put together some really nice game plans against the Bears, and specifically against Matt Nagy. So this is a huge test for Trubisky to see if we can continue to see if what we have seen is actually real.
Mark, one of the things that surprised a lot of people, I think even some of the media wasn't really aware of it until mid-late this week, but Lambeau Field, the playing surface itself, for a long time the gold standard in the NFL, it has devolved this year for whatever reason, and some are calling it the worst surface in the NFL over the last 5-6 weeks. I'm sure you've gone out and tested it. That and how cold is it? I know it's supposed to be, Lambeau type, Arctic conditions. What about the field and the conditions up there today?
Yeah, Hub, it is slick. The field is legit slick. I walked across it. And then Allen Robinson was out here, and he came over by the sideline to get warm. And I asked him, I said, is it just me, or is that feel slick? And before I even got the question out, he was like, hell yeah, were the two words he said. So there will be longer spike views. That's what Robinson told me just a short while ago. So it's legit. I mean, it's a slippery, hard field because they've had more precipitation. They've had more snow to this point in the year than they did last year or even in previous years. So, that's the reason why. Weather-wise, it's freezing down here, man. It's 9 degrees. Luckily, for now, I have two blasting petroleum heaters right next to me. And perfectly enough for Patrick Manley, I was just talking to Patrick Scales, Bears long snapper. He was giving me some tips on, you know, how close to stand, and, you know, guys have started on fire due to the heaters in the past. So I think I got this thing down.
Yeah, Brody, Mark, get away from the heaters, man. Toughen up.
Mark, no offense, man, but I was asking about the players.
Hell out of here, Brody. Damn long snappers talking about heat and your calves. Shave the hair off, Brody.
What's the
you better not be wearing sleeves either, Grody.
No
sleeves.
Oh, yeah. I'm taking layers off as I speak, Olin.
Oh, I got nothing. I got nothing. I'm going to sit over here and just be quiet right now. I'm going to be a long snapper. Just be over here and be quiet. Stand by the heater.
Brody. Vaseline those arms up. Yeah. Vaseline up.
Mark is normally a very kind of average perplexion guy. I'm guessing about as red in the cheeks right now as he's going to be all day long. Hey, Mark, thank you much, man. Have a great call, and we'll talk to you as the week goes on.
All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
All right, that is Mark Grody. Guys, it's just there's something about this week and the way that's all come together, and I think a lot of us always feel the Bear-Packer thing. Arthur Arkush, he's our managing editor of Pro Football Weekly. Yeah, he's related. Talked to Bilal Nichols. I guess this was either this morning or yesterday, and asked Bilal Nichols, a second-year player who was a healthy scratch in this game last year, you know, Bilal, are you starting to get it? And he said, and I quote, "It's funny because quickly you start to realize how deep it is and you start to develop that hatred. You start to feel it early. I feel like I'm getting there. I'm close. And we are an hour away from kickoff. Bears-Packers, the 200th meeting at Lambeau Field. We got a lot more to break down for you. A very quick commercial break here, and then we're back with more on our Ameristar pregame show featuring Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz. I'm Hub Arkish. Get to the Ameristar's new sports book in East Chicago as soon as you can. We're back on the radio in just a moment.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.